The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by A2X Accounting. Financials are crucial for making good business decisions, unless your financials are a hot mess. And that's where A2X comes in. It takes those opaque lump payments that Shopify, Amazon, and other platforms drop into your bank account and reconciles them all up and puts everything in its perfect place. So your revenues get dated perfectly into the right month so you know what your correct gross margin is. Breaks out your Amazon fees so you know when Uncle Bezos is charging you a little bit more than he was the month before. It breaks out your shipping revenue from your product revenue so you know when you need to charge more for shipping and freight, and dumps it all beautifully and perfectly into QuickBooks or Xero. Most importantly, perhaps, it's super easy to use and reliable, rated 4.8 out of 5 stars by ECF members in the ECF review directory. So if you want to start getting your books into shape and make better decisions, check them out at ecommercefuel.com/A2X. The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by One Click Upsell, the most popular, largest upsell app in the Shopify marketplace, trusted by over 11,000 users, over 1,900 of those big spending Shopify Plus stores, and they've generated over $200 million in revenue for the merchants that use them. And you may be thinking, oh, hey, Andrew, I've heard of One Click Upsell. I know these guys, but do you really? Do you know what they've rolled out recently? They've got some cool new stuff. For their pre-purchase and their post-purchase upsells, you can now select from multiple different offers to present your customers. So instead of having them just have to pick from one single thing, you can give them the option to pick from multiple upsells, which helps and has proven to increase the number of people who actually take you up on those upsells. So if you're not using upsells in your store, it's an amazingly easy, fast way to increase your average order value and your revenues. So check them out at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brands build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today on the show, joined by Leo Caracas, he's the owner of GoCase.com, which is a company, 8-figure company that sells phone and media cases all over the world, as well as JumpVentures.co. I had a chance to hang out with Leo at Ecom Camp, which is our event for 8-figure store owners this fall in Palm Springs. We got to hang out, race some BMW cars around some tracks, enjoy the mountains. It was super cool. You get to know his story a little bit better. And wanted to have him on because he has done a couple things that are impressive. One, he's scaled a business in a very competitive niche. Leo, good to have you, man. Welcome.
Hi, Andrew. Also great to have you and great to be here on the podcast.
Yeah. And you're in the Netherlands right now, which, man, apologies. I didn't even think about that, how late it is. But you live in the Netherlands, originally from Brazil. You still go back there a lot. Go cases. Why phone cases, like, to start out before we get into the, you know, the methodology and everything? Like, that seems like such a hard market to compete in, but you've obviously been able to do that. So how did you start it? And, like, how are you able to compete in a market that has so many, you know, so many other people in it?
Yeah, that's for sure. Nowadays is a extremely crowded market. In every corner of the world, there's a brand doing phone cases. And we started back in 2015. We actually 5 partners doing GoCase. And when we started back in 2015 in Brazil, it was really, we understood that the market was really dull. There was not that many different options. And if we added the flavor of design to these cases, we could really have something going, right? We identified that early on that could be a different path to phone cases. And nowadays, you see a lot of competitors doing the same. But back in 2015, that was not so clear. We saw it clear that there's an opportunity, but back in 2015, that was not so clear. So that was a way to differentiate at that time.
And what was that? That was like you add custom designs or logos or pictures to the phone case. How do you make them different?
Yeah, that's the magic of GoCase, and that's how we differentiate in the market. So nowadays, yeah, I challenge people to go to our website and really see the different ways we have customization engines running in our website. So there's thousands of ways you can customize your case with different designs. You can use pictures, you can use names, numbers, avatars, you can use effects. We even have a case that now has AI on it. So if you type in your name, it will give you the definition of your name in several different ways, given your zodiac number, your zodiac sign, given your date of birth, given background of your name itself. So we were always trying to innovate on the customization side, and getting design and customization to work together has been our sweet spot and the way to differentiate in the market.
Got it. So started in 2015. A big part we're going to talk about today is how you help companies spot if they have the potential to really scale up past eight figures and identifying some of those telling indicators, but also helping them focus on the right things. Where did you have a stall point with GoCases or with GoCase rather, where you grew for a little bit, but then you kind of stalled out and had to do something different to get to that next level? And if so, what was it?
Oh, we had several. Our history has always been of crazy growth, stall. So we really understand that the company that makes $1 million is not the same company that makes five. The company that makes five is not the same that makes 10. The company that makes 10 is not the same that makes 20. We understand that there has to be different things. You need to learn different things and you need to really experiment with different things to build machineries in the company that will unlock that growth. So we really saw that our playbook to get from 1 to 5 had to change from 5 to 10 and had to change from 10 to 20. It was just as simple as that, that it had a cap. So we had to go over this last 8 years or so through several tests, and it's one of the things that we will discuss in the podcast. But we had a lot of coaches and mentors throughout this journey that really helped us understand how to also jump some obstacles and not have to grow to some hurdles that it would be organically our path. You know, we could jump a lot just by advice. But definitely we stalled for a couple of years and grew again and stalled again and grew again. And that has been the way that we figure out our playbook to grow to eight figures.
Let's I'd love to take those, like you mentioned, those three stages. One, you know, going from 1 to 5, 5 to 10, 10 to 20. And let's start with the first one. I'd be interested to hear what those stall points were for each one. So the 1 to 5 phase, like what was the hardest part of going from 1 to 5 million, and how did you overcome kind of that initial the friction or the, you know, kind of the gravity pulling you down in the early part of that phase?
Yeah, so the first phase is actually 0 to 1, right? The 0 to 1 and to go back, because I think this is an interesting story to tell as well, because you asked about how do we differentiate. We actually figured out how to make the company start working via social media. So it was the early days of Instagram, and it was Carnival. And basically, we were trying to sell the designs in different ways, and it was not really catching on until Carnival came. And at that time, there was a song that blew up in Brazil that was very known and everyone was singing. And we said,
quick, can I interrupt? When you say Carnival, you mean like the big Latin American holiday, the Carnival Festival, right? Is that what you're talking about?
Exactly. The one that is just happening now. And I happen to miss it because I'm in the Netherlands.
It's too bad. It's so fun, man. We were in Ecuador once for Carnival, and it's like, I need to go back and do it again. It's amazing.
Yeah, so for Brazilians, it's a very big deal. It's a very big thing. And it's a thing we all look for throughout every year that it comes again and fast. But yeah, there was this song. I don't remember now. I don't recall now which song was it. But we thought, okay, let's. What if we do a design around this song that has the lyrics and we posted on Instagram in our profile, and then it blew up. It's like, whoa. Now we see what's happening here. Okay, now we know how to use social media. At this exact spot that was blowing up, we came up with a product that caught fire because it sparked some desire on people to have it, right? So that 0 to 1 moment is like, okay, figuring out how you're going to, first of all, spark some desire for your product. And we understood that with Instagram. Then we started reaching out to influencers, early days of influencers, so they could really use the cases and start posing with the case. And that, at that time, it was really not as crowded of a market as it is today, influencer marketing, right? But 0 to 1 was like that first initial phase where you're just getting some validation and you understand what's going to get people to buy. Yeah. What is the message you have to give, what your product needs to have to get people to buy. From 1 to 5, there's a couple of things that need to be in place. First of all, you really need to have some understanding of how to replicate that message over and over again. So to actually make 5 times the revenue you're making for your validation phase is like, okay, you made a case about the song, but that's going to cap out. Like the song is going to go down, the trend is going to go down, people are not going to be that much more interested. How are you going to replicate that again? So we started thinking, okay, shit, we need to be on top of the trend. We need to have a trend radar. We need to have a trend machine And then we start thinking and also getting a lot of advice. People always telling us, you need to build machines within the company. You need to build a trend machine. And then, okay, we build a trend machine. What are the trending topics? How can we make a case around the trending topic? How can we think over and over again every week, what can we do in social media and what can we do in the product to make sure that we have something that is appealing and every month make more and more revenue? So that's the 1 to 5, right? You create a system. You start to create early systems and mechanisms that will replicate that initial validation over and over again. And this is how we get to 5. From 5 to 10, that is, I would say, the era or the timing of optimization and real growth. Yeah. So, okay, you validated your product. Okay, you know how to create new products. You know how to create trendy products. You know how to create desirable products. And you know how to push it to some level on organic social media or paid social media. But if you wanted to go to the next level, you really need to know the game of paid advertisement. Or for some companies, you really need to know the game of organic growth. For us, it was paid media, right? So we became really, really good at understanding Facebook and how the algorithm worked. We worked like crazy understanding and trying to hack the algorithm several times to see how we can explore more and more growth month over month. So it was actually me and my partner in the beginning that were really going inside the platform, doing crazy nights every weekend, trying to see what else we could do, what different type of content, what different type of messaging, what different type of settings within the platform we could do to actually spend more at a profitable rate and grow the company exponentially. And this is when we get to 10 million. And it's really optimizing the channels, optimizing the way you do advertisement, optimizing the way you do retention, optimizing the way you message your products to your customers. So this 5 to 10 is really, it really takes like a different level of understanding of how to push your product, how to continuously send a message, and how to optimize that the product merchandising, pricing, and so on and so forth.
Got it. And then what about that last stage, 10 to 20?
So 10 to 20 is when you actually have a little bit more infrastructure or a little bit more of a team to really help out and build a complete machinery. You know, in the end of the day, you are really going to need certain components in the company to be analyzed and always improved. You're going to need to really understand how to improve your P&L. You're going to need to understand how to create content and have a content machine coming out. You're going to need a trend machine. You're going to need media buyers. You're going to really need a kind of all-around team or all-around skills to work together to optimize this to another crazy level. And when the systems are in place and you know which tools to use, you know what's important to consider, you start to diversify a little bit in terms of channels, you start to diversify a little bit in terms of products, and you get to a next stage. But this is more or less, okay, you have a lot of experience, you bring people that are complementary and are going to fill in small gaps that you have within your strategy, and you're just going to get more out of your product. You're going to get a higher conversion rate, a higher AOV, higher retention, positive loops of growth. So this is how the 20 million will unfold.
Do you have, as you're talking about this, like people, there's people listening who have successfully made it through all of these, that also that have kind of tapped out at each one of these phases as well. And I'm thinking of a comic comes to mind where there's a guy, I'm sure a lot of people have seen this, it's more of a picture. A guy's like digging for gold right underground, and he's dug for, you know, 300, 400, 500 yards, and he gets, you know, a few feet from before where this treasure is, and he turns around and goes back, and he's so close. So that comes to mind for me, because I think like, which one of these stages was the hardest to go through and which one was the most fun? Because I'm sure that there's people to get sometimes to, I heard another quote today that was interesting. Like, if your business isn't getting easier as it grows, you're doing something wrong. And there's that concept of no man's land between, I think a lot of times for companies, in that low 7-figure to maybe 8, where you have to hire ahead of the curve and really invest heavily before you're ready to get to the next level. So all that said, do you have a phase, and you've seen this in so many different companies, which phase is the most fun, where people have the most fun, and which phase is the hardest to get through on those kind of tiers that you mentioned?
Look, personally, I love the phase of 1 to 10. I love the phase of 1 to 10 because you're just figuring out what's going to get the company to exponential growth. In this 1 to 10, you can skip the 5 quite fast if you know what you're doing. And the 1 to 10 is like, okay, today we're looking at the figure. Tomorrow is already 2 times higher. 1 month from now is already 10 times higher. So this for me is like, I love it. You know, I live for that. And it's that time that you really get excited. Right, you really get excited. I don't get excited building systems. That's for sure not. But that comes later. But if you know how to do it over and over again, you kind of skip this whole complicated or complex setup you need to make to build systems. But for me, the 1 to 10 is really the most fun. Yeah, is the most exciting one. Also because you going from small time to maybe big time. You entering the big leagues, right? Or so to say, the first big step into to e-commerce validation, and that's really, really the main out. This is why we started Jump Ventures. It's our sweet spot. Is where we have most fun. Is growing companies, and using whatever we learned with GoCase and the other companies that we did now in the past, the past 2 years, applying this over and over. And this is the part that really gets me fulfilled. Yeah. Now you also mentioned a couple of very interesting things that maybe is nice to address, because this is also something we talk with all the entrepreneurs we help. Yeah, it's a very lonely road for many. Some are solo entrepreneurs, and they really are stuck within their own mind, and they are thinking about quitting, or they don't know when to quit. They don't know if they're being too stubborn, or they don't know if they just need to push a little bit harder. And it's a very tough environment. It's not easy to be an entrepreneur, and it's not talked enough. This is not talked enough. And one of the things that that really I always reflect is the picture you just told me about the guy searching for the gold. When I saw it the first time, I was like, who am I, man? Am I close to the gold, or is it getting there? And you're always trying to find the new gold. You know, it's as long as you have conviction that you are in the path. For me, I have a plan of 5-10 years of what I want to be and what I want to do. As long as I stay in that path, I think that I'm going to that path. I said, okay, the gold can come or might not come, but at least I think I'm doing the right thing. You know, if you have that doubt that you don't know if what you're doing right now is important for your 5-year, 10-year plan or long-term plan, then it gets really hard to not think about all the time, where's the gold? Where's the gold? Where's the gold? Am I getting close? Am I getting close? So this is really complicated, and it's tricky for entrepreneurs to get out of it. So yeah, I just wanted to address, because this is something we talk over and over with the entrepreneurs we help. It's not easy to be in the mind of an entrepreneur and always trying to look for the next objective.
Which one's your least favorite? And I'm getting, you kind of lumped 1 through 10 in there. Do you enjoy the very early startup phase, the nascent phase of the business, 0 to 1? Or do you enjoy kind of once you have the team up and running at that 10 plus million and you get optimized and infrastructure and team?
No, so the 0 to 1, it's fun to think along, but it's not particularly my favorite part. The 0 to 1 is nice. It's always nice to hear new ideas, but also from how many of those ideas do we actually have a possible validated product. So it's nice to ideate, but for me, it's not the most fun. For me, the fun part is really growing, thinking about how to grow, what are the mechanisms that are going to be behind that growth, and how you can use the assets of the company to really scale this up fast. That's what I lose my sleep on. The structuring part, hiring, creating departments, creating processes, that's for me, it's really no fun. I had to do it, and we have a lot of people working for us at GoCase, and we're very proud of how far we took the company. There's over 150 people in the company, but I have to say, it's very energy consuming, and it can be, you might not get that energy back immediately with all this activity. So for me, it's really thinking about how to grow the business.
Yeah. Last question, and then we're going to get into Jump Ventures and specifically kind of the three things that you look for that you think are crucial for being able to accelerate quickly out of those, you know, 6-7 figures and into the 8-figure range. You just mentioned you have a big team at GoCase, 100, 150 people. What does that look like, and how much of your time does that take? Like, describe your team, especially your leadership team, a little bit, if you would, and how many hours a week do you spend on that business? Have you gotten to the point with, you know, your business where you can kind of oversee things at a high level, feedback with your leadership team, and have a lot of time for doing other things? Or are you still very much involved in the weeds of that day to day?
No. So I'm not that into the routines anymore and the very nitty-gritty day-to-day, more involved on the strategic part, how are we setting goals, which is our growth path, what is our next step, and how are we thinking about product and how are we thinking about channels and growth overall, yeah. And structuring the company, also supply chain. So the big topics of the company I'm involved in and thinking along and doing this. But one of the things that has been key for our growth is having exceptional people, having A players in the team. So this is a concept that I also got mentored and coached a lot, is finding those A players and giving the autonomy and responsibility for those A players to perform. So it took us a lot of time to find and to refine our hiring process. But we have come to the point that now we have a lot of good people that are in charge of different departments within GoCase, from the design standpoint, engineering, growth, supply chain. And they have really grown together with us. So we have people that, many people that, that are with us for 4 or 5 years, and they have been there from GoCase, start of growth to now the much bigger company, and they have gone through the same experience together with us, like the problems of growing, the pains of growing, the excitement of growing, the excitement of reaching new levels, and yeah, I can definitely say that these guys are the ones making GoCase still fly.
What are the top one or two things you look for? You mentioned it took you a while to get your hiring process dialed in. I think hiring is such a fascinating thing to look at, and people approach it a little differently every company, of course. What are like the you know, what do you really focus on in that hiring process or their background?
Okay, I think for me I had to learn that. I had to get punched in the face a couple of times to learn that properly. But basically, it's you're hiring for culture, you're hiring for behavior. If you start hiring for skills and for technical knowledge, you end up having someone that will not fit long term and can be a very bad influence on the team. So at the early start, I would really give too much emphasis on how smart the person was and how technically good and etc. And totally, yeah, pass on the behavior, how fit it was to work for us, how fit it was between background and possible patterns the person had with our patterns. So when we started really diving deep and talking to other companies, much bigger companies, how do you hire? What is your process? What are you looking for? And then we had the common thread. Look, the culture one is a very, very important part of the process. It's really heavy. We need to really ask a lot of questions. These questions, you can have a lot of different tests for the candidates to understand better their profile, to understand better how to judge their behavior. Then we understood that we really screwed up a lot in the beginning, because I have to say, we had several times in the early years a decision where 3 or 4 people interviewed the same person and we think, oh, there's a red flag on this this thing that he or she said, but he's very smart, she's very smart, so let's go and hire. End up being a problem later on. So every time we go, that there's a red flag, anyone has a red flag, okay, it doesn't go. It doesn't pass. So also having this unity and unifying the way we view culture has been very important. But that's the singular most important thing that we had to learn to actually make a cohesive team and a team that strives for the same thing and has a fit of culture with our culture. It's not that the person is not good, but it's a relationship. Sometimes people don't see that you're entering a relationship, and there needs to be fit in the relationship between the two parties.
Hey, Andrew here with a little aside. If you're listening, you're obviously interested in e-commerce. And so I want to make sure you know about our private community for 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brands at E-Commerce Fuel. And the secret sauce, like you might guess, is it's limited to people who own stores, who are in the trenches, practitioners doing this stuff. It's a very curated community, which has 3 big benefits. First, it means everyone inside can help get fast, on-point answers to your most important questions. If you're trying to decide if SMS is a tool worth rolling out, if you just got suspended on Amazon, if you're trying to hire a director of e-commerce, these are all things that either people have experience with or have gone through in the forums. And if you post and ask questions, you'll get answers within hours, sometimes even minutes, as well as being able to tap into close to a decade of archive discussions. So you get a lot of insights, fast answers to pressing questions. You get to plug into an amazing network of over 1,100 experienced e-commerce entrepreneurs. So
So you can reach out to people if you're in e-commerce fuel. Our members are incredibly giving and generous. And so if you want to reach out to someone with expertise, oftentimes we'd be happy to share what they know. If you're, you know, traveling, hopefully when traveling is a common thing again, a lot of our members would hit in the city, you know, DC, Dallas, Sydney, Australia, you know, London, wherever it is, and be able to have someone on the ground you can connect with or maybe grab a beer with. It's an amazing network. And then finally, we've got a huge user-generated review library with over 10,000 reviews on agencies, software, e-commerce software that you can tap into to avoid costly hiring and software mistakes. Nothing is worse than spending 3 months with an agency to onboard only to find out that a bunch of people already tried them and they were horrible and they wasted a bunch of your money and your life. So those are the kind of things you can avoid tapping into the unbiased reviews and experiences of our members with our software directory. So if any of this sounds interesting to you, you should join us at ecommercefuel.com. You can learn more. You can apply for membership there. We also have a 5x ROI guarantee. If you own a 7 or 8 figure brand and your membership fees for our community don't pay for themselves at least 5 times over the course of the first year, we'll refund it completely as well as send you $1,000 just for the wasted time. So ecommercefuel.com, check it out. We'd love to have you apply and potentially join the community. All right. Back to the discussion.
Let's talk about Jump. Jumpventures.co is the name of your company. And again, you help accelerate companies from 500K to maybe in the low seven figure, 1-2 million range to 8 or 9 figures really quickly. And you've done that with, I believe, over 20 companies with coaching and investment and things like that over the last number of years. So we were talking about this before we hopped on, but there's kind of three attributes. Either you do kind of a test that you look at to see, hey, is this a company that has the potential to scale? And then after that is kind of confirmed, okay, there's some potential here, a couple of things you focus on to really help them scale as quickly as possible. So I'd love to have you walk through those if you're willing.
Yeah, for sure. I posed the question that if anyone was looking for mentoring or coaching, I would do that in a structured program of 3 to 6 months to see if the knowledge we had with GoCase and the playbook we had developed with GoCase was replicable. That said, we had interest from quite a few companies, and I started helping these entrepreneurs really think along and see how could they grow their business and what could be the most common levers or things that they could pull to really grow exponentially. I have to say that within that time, we managed to really grow some businesses, to exponentially go a couple. Yeah. And some we just helped structure the way that they were thinking along, the way that they were doing their finances, the way that they were thinking about hiring, so on and so forth. And that was very important for me to say, look, guys, I think this is the end of my knowledge here and help that I can do for your company and yourself. But for others, I really could go full blown, right? Based on that, I also looked for another attribute within the companies, which is the founder. The same way that there is A players as employees, there's also A founders for us. There's those guys who we believe have the work ethic, who we believe have the ambition and the drive to really grow a business fast, and they really want, they're really looking for that. So when we found that, we really tried to get an engagement, a higher engagement, and this is how we started Jump Ventures. Yeah, this is how we start engaging in our business model of our atypical growth venture. Yeah, when we look at these businesses, and I try to understand, let me see if these early stage entrepreneurs and their businesses have a potential to significantly scale. Yeah, I'm basically trying to look for the brand factor. I'm trying to look for a brand. And the brand for me is a little bit defined in the conversion rate that they have, the average order value that they have, the retention, and the product feedback. Once these KPIs are pretty healthy, and we have had a lot of experience understanding what is a healthy conversion rate based on the traffic, what is a healthy AOV for paid advertisement, what is a healthy retention for so-and-so product category, we understand, hey, look, this business has amazing potential to grow if we are able to untap or unlock certain things. Yeah. So when I look at these early KPIs, I can then make a pretty good assessment if they have a really great potential to exponentially grow or not.
And Leo, to interrupt here, so a couple of those, what are some discrete metric. So you mentioned conversion rate. What do you consider a good conversion rate? What do you consider a good AOV? And what do you consider great retention, maybe as measured by the percentage of people that come back and buy again? What are some actual kind of metrics you can link to those?
Yeah, so it's always a little bit tough to say that this is the defining metric, because we have seen so many different business styles that if you don't tell the story looking at the whole picture, it gets a little bit hard to really give a number and say, hey, this is a defining number for your business, right? But generally, yeah, once we see a business that has an AOV of $75 and above, we think, hey, this business has enough room to grow based on paid advertisement, because there is room enough to do paid advertisement. Things that are products that are below $40, for instance, on nowadays landscape of Facebook advertisement, TikTok, etc., is very challenging to grow profitably. So this is one very defining metric. Okay, when we look at product reviews, it's for us, it's pretty easy. We're not looking at a 4 out of 5, a 4.3 out of 5. We're looking at things that are really 4.7 out of 5. Yeah, so we're really looking at maybe people had problems in their experience because of shipping times or because of bugs in the website, but the product itself, people are extremely happy with. Yeah, when we talk about retention and we think about a product that has at least a 30% chance for repurchase, yeah? So we see that 30% of the customers do come back to buy a second time. It's like, okay, there is room here to continuously grow this. If it's a 10% and it's a single product brand, then it becomes really hard, you know? So a 30% for us, like, okay, there's room to grow since there's already a 30%. And conversion rate, that's the tough one to tell you, because there's so many different types of situations where a conversion rate can be high or low. So if you do only organic traffic, you can have a pretty good conversion rate, because a lot of qualified traffic is getting in the website. If you already started with paid media and you have a significant spend, yeah, for an early stage entrepreneur, if you're spending 20%, 15% of your revenues on paid media, for instance, and you have above 3% of a conversion rate, for instance, this is a pretty good figure, yeah? But it will highly depend on where your traffic coming from, what is the AOV of your product, in which country are you actually selling your product, and which type of vertical. So when you put all that together, you start to tell a story and say, okay, this AOV is pretty different, or no, this AOV is pretty average. Yeah. So it's easy to make a 5% conversion rate if you're selling a $10 product, you know, it's pretty cheap. But try to do that with $150, $200. Yeah. No, that's pretty interesting.
You mentioned too, I mean, that's one of the big pillars you just went through, is making sure, either creating or making sure that you've got, I think what maybe you would call a proper brand in terms of the good metrics, good KPIs, good foundation for that. You also mentioned the importance of a lot of businesses are in the demand capture environment, right? Like they go out, hey, I'm looking for a rain chain for my house or something for my gutters. Okay, I'll type in rain chain. Let's capture that exacting demand and sell them a product. It seems like you focus more, you mentioned, you focus more on demand generation businesses, creating instant desire for products. And when I hear that, maybe it's just because it's one of those, you know, entrepreneurial cliche mantras that's been hammered into the zeitgeist for business owners for a decade. But it's like, it's much easier to fill demand than create it, right? And so I traditionally have thought about that way. But you have a very different take. So talk a little bit about that, please. Why you like demand generation versus filling, and how you try to do that, because that seems hard.
Yeah, for sure. First of all, this is how we grew GoCase. Like that story of Carnival is demand generation, you know. So the way we grew the brand, the way we grew it in several countries and throughout these last 8 years was how, and this was the one key question we keep asking ourselves and we keep asking people who work with us. How do we create desire? How do we create desire? How do we create desire on the product? How do we create desire on the content, on the offer? The word is desire, you know? And for us, it's thinking there's demand generation and demand capture, as you explained. And demand capture for me are more Google businesses. Those businesses that people already made up their mind that they want a product for to do so and so, and they're looking for the best price, best quality feedback, so on and so forth. And you don't have that much room to influence a new acquisition, or at least that's what I would think. And demand generation are those type of businesses that you are able to really push out a message, a visual, an offer, or something that it will instantly create the desire for that consumer to buy. I want to go and buy now. I really need it today. I need it this week. This is amazing. I really want to buy immediately. So we are in the business of demand generation. And to do demand generation well is really hard. And keeping up with the trends to do demand generation is really hard. So again, 6 to 8 years ago, we would use a different type of content than what we use today. Today is the TikTok world, you know. The way to generate content and the content that people consume, get influenced by, have a very specific set of characteristics. You also still have YouTube, of course, but it's a very different way to create content now in 2023 than it was back in 2016, 15. The things, the type of videos you would use, the type of pictures you would use, the type of messaging you would use, completely different than what you have now in Facebook, in TikTok. It's short, it's snappy, it's up to the point, it has instant desire. And to keep up with that, it's very important.
How do you, so there's two elements of desire, right? Like in the trends one you mentioned for GoCase, there's desire based on something that's broader in the market, that's popular, that's, you know, it's a song you mentioned that was popular during Carnival. How do you, maybe we can take Woobles if you're comfortable. How do you create desire for someone to buy a Woobles kit? And if you're not familiar with the Woobles, they create these amazing little yarn kits and crocheting and knitting kits that they do training, but they also have the packages for them that can help people that are beginners get up and running easily. I'm sure they have stuff for intermediate advanced too. How do you create desire for someone? Because desire is a very root, you know, kind of emotion in humans. We're kind of getting a little bit, putting on the psychologist hat here, but how do you think about when you, because Woobles is someone you use and help them grow. How do you think about desire as it relates to helping them, wanting them to buy one of those kits? You know, talk about that a bit if you would.
Yeah. And this goes with any brand. Okay. You really need to understand common things that the customers are telling you, like, how does the product make them feel? What did the experience of buying did for them? How differentiated that was, and what are the really core benefits of it? So we try to understand what the customer is telling us in several rounds of feedback, and we try to implement that in the content. So it's not only about, it's a mix of what the customer is really looking forward while buying a product, and what trends can you blend in there, right? So for a product that might be a hobby, for instance, like we discussed the Woobles, the feeling of accomplishment, it's something very interesting to pose for desire. The message of a new hobby is also very interesting for people who are looking for something different. And the way to visualize that is key. So it's not just about what are you saying, but what is eye-catching, what is thumb stopper, what type of picture, what type of video is really going to get people to stop for those first 3 seconds and say, what's happening here? Yeah. And that's a small science task for us right now. It's always thinking, how do you first get someone to stop in a feed to look what we have to say? And then second, how do you make sure that whatever you're saying is up to the point and has a converting message to it? Yeah. So you just need to look at your customer. What is he saying? What are the most common threads, and what is really strong to propose, right? So I give you an example from GoCase, for instance. We made a customization engine that you can customize yourself as an avatar. And we created a specific product that you could create your professional avatar. If you are a doctor, there was an avatar that you can dress yourself as a doctor. If you're a nurse, if you're a firefighter. So what we did in advertisement was like, and this was big at a certain point last year, hey, and we advertised this to specific professions within Facebook and within TikTok. If you're a nurse, stop scrolling now. This is for you. Whoa, wait a second. What? How do you know? And then this product that you can customize yourself, you can put your name, you can put your hair, you can fully customize yourself as an avatar of a nurse. This is for you. And then, whoa, wow, this really speaks to me. And what you just said in the beginning made me stop. So the visuals and the way we communicated the message in the video was extremely important, but also how we managed to catch a trend by using certain things in TikTok to make that happen.
Got it. So it makes a ton of sense. The other one, well, the second one you mentioned is paid content is everything in terms of growing. So talk a little bit about that facet of ramping things up. I am never really focused on paid. I've always been more word of mouth, organic, those kind of things. But paid is a huge part of your formula. So talk a little bit about how that plays a role in scaling quickly.
Yes, for us, content is everything when you think about growth. Like, we don't see a path to fast and stellar growth if you don't have content. So it starts there. There's no way to really, it's the medium to actually get to that growth. And when we think about content being placed or organic or paid, we understand that the platforms have been changing their organic algorithms and visibility quite fast. And we never really depended on that or put all our chips on an organic way to grow, right? That was because we were always ambitious to try to go fast as possible, but also because we saw certain things in early days, like how Facebook and how Instagram changed their organic algorithms and completely kicked some people out of business. And we went the paid media way, and we tried to be really good at the paid media way. Why? Also, if you keep up in the game and you understand what are people talking about, how the algorithm is changing, what is relevant in these different types of platforms, you can really start to plan out your growth. You can really understand, this is how much I can invest, this is how much I can grow at this much profitability or return on my investment. And if you are really going deep on those platforms, whenever there's a setback, you're still able to swim against the tide. So you're still able to figure out a way out of that problem. So for instance, when the iOS update came in, even forgot, I think it was 2021, right? And a lot of people got impacted at that time. We just went deep into the figures and tried to understand, okay, how the algorithm changed here and how can we adapt to that? And I have to say that we figured out a lot of different hacks to play within Facebook advertisement to not feel so much the pain of that iOS update, which a lot of people felt and we managed to navigate. But this was really deeply understanding what was the data telling us, how the algorithm was behaving, what was important at this time, at this point in time, and how can we better diverge our investments at this moment.
What were some of those hacks that you figured out? Everyone listening that has been running Facebook ads for the last 2 years is screaming, ask him what the hacks were. So I got to oblige here, or at least the tactics. What did you guys do to be able to circumnavigate some of those, that last effectiveness?
I will give you the biggest hack that we understood at that time. Basically, what was happening after the iOS update, Facebook was being obliged to ask customers if they wanted to be tracked or not on iOS devices. Historically, what we have is that the iOS device holder is actually one of the most valuable customers for Facebook advertisements. The guy who has a higher AOV, a higher LTV, a higher probability to spend, etc. While Android users, you have high-end Androids and low-end Androids. And the low-end Androids really, they don't perform that well on the advertisement side. But what happened was, and I invite anyone with that data from that year to take a look at this, what happened with the algorithm is, since it lacked data about iOS devices, it just started shifting the money that was given to Android devices. So what happened at that time, a lot of advertisers were getting more and more comfortable about putting their money on a very broad structure, not really targeting that well, not doing interest-based, and that's just as broad. Facebook will decide where my money is going to go and how it's going to optimize here. So what the algorithm start to do is, I don't have data about this set of people, so I will start advertising to this set that I have data, which is Android. And this smaller audience, which has, not even that smaller, but this audience, which has historically a lower performance than the other one, starts to get inflated with more and more money from different advertisers, making the CPMs really high, and therefore even harder to make a proper return of your investment. While this other pool of customers, the iOS ones, were being left out because you could not track them, therefore Facebook could not report a performance, therefore, yeah, don't do it. So what and
they were the most, some of the most profitable customers we're getting, potential
most
customers.
Most valuable. Yeah, the most valuable customers, that's for sure. So understanding that, what we did was, okay, let's figure out attribution on our side. Let's figure out ways to build attribution reports with Google Analytics and measure on our side. And let's target specifically people that Facebook cannot really tell the performance, iOS 14 plus devices. So not only we were putting a good amount of money on people who had already made the update to iOS 14 plus, then they were valuable customers, but we were trying to do the refining and tracking and the optimization based on internal reports that we have from Google Analytics and other things to make sure that we're taking the right decisions. Facebook could not report the full funnel, only the early part, but we started having pretty decent results. And what happens was, before, the CPMs of Android would be way cheaper than iPhone iOS users. And at that time, iOS is way cheaper than Android because everyone's going to Android involuntarily.
Interesting. That's fascinating. The last thing that is kind of a part of your three-leg stool in terms of scaling up business very quickly is it kind of, it all summarizes, maybe an 80-20 on impact and speed. We were in the pre-interview, we were talking, and I mean, I feel like you mentioned pricing, like pricing, raise prices. What are the things that you can do very quickly today or in the next week that can move the needle? Pricing came up. It's one of my favorite things to try to encourage people to do. Never regretted raising prices in my entire business career. What are some of the other things that you really focus on to help accelerate people quickly on that same kind of philosophy?
Yeah, so we have this framework or saying that we started way back in GoCase, and it comes out from a saying in Portuguese called Pulo do Gato. Yeah, Pulo do Gato, if you translate it to English, would be the leapfrog. It is the jump of the cat, and that's how we named the company Jump Ventures, because of the jump of the cat, and we're always looking for the next jump of the cat. What does that mean? It means that we're looking for things that have minimum effort and maximum impact. Minimum effort not because we're lazy, but because if we prioritize right, we will do things that are not going to be that costly, are not going to be that timely, or not going to require that many people to be involved, and that has a higher probability of impact. So things that basically we can test, we can execute today, tomorrow we might have a validation, and already have an impact. So when you start having a framework to really judge all your ideas or projects or things we want to do for the brand, for the company, etc., and you put it in a matrix, what can I do today that can be validated tomorrow that has high probability for impact? You have a pretty simple matrix that is, okay, then one of the first things I'm going to do is change prices, right? So you can think about, yeah, I'm going to do an SEO project. It's really important. Okay, it is important, but it will take you a lot of time to validate that that's a good path for you. And changing pricing, for instance, could be one of the highest impact things that you can do today. And depending on the traffic you have in the website, tomorrow or tops in 1 week, you're already going to get a validation. It's either going to be bad or good, but you're going to have a validation, right? So when you start thinking about this, we really did jumps of 50%, 100%, 30%, week over week, month over month, just by, okay, what is the next jump of the cat? What is the next thing we're going to do? What is the next? No, let's think about something that we really don't have to involve that many people, spend that much money, and then we can, tomorrow we can get it. So that goes around with pricing, with merchandising, bundling, specific offers, a way to change your email flows, a way to test out a specific merchandising on email campaigns. So we really think about, okay, what are things I can execute immediately? Yeah, and the impact is gonna be pretty fast. So when you look at that and you see the impact probability, you really don't think about, let me change the button from red to green. This is going to be crazy impact. That's going to be way down in the list, right? So you're going to think about things that can really completely change your business.
Amazing, Leo. This is fantastic. Obviously, it's cool to hear you, because you've obviously thought so deeply about this and seen it across so many different cycles and pulled out the patterns. If people want to work with you, if they're thinking like, hey, this Leo guy sounds like he knows what he's talking about, tell them quickly about Jump Ventures. What do you guys offer specifically for coaching or working together? Do you take a fee? Like, is it fee-based? Do you take a small part of equity in the company? Like, give people the lay of the land for if they're interested in exploring this further with you.
Yeah, for sure. So within Jump Ventures, we are really an atypical so to say, venture capitalist. We are something between an incubator and a venture capitalist. We are an incubator because we are really hands-on and we do the work together with the brands. We execute on a lot of things together and we don't leave them after 6 weeks or 8 weeks. We are there for the whole ride. And a venture capital because we really want to take stakes in the company. We want to take really shares and have stock options later on and invest on those companies if necessary. Yeah. What do we do and what do we look for? We are pretty selective on who we work with. We try to see which are the top potential businesses, top potential entrepreneurs that our knowledge can go long ways and our playbook, network, contacts, and tools can really help. And which entrepreneurs we believe can be long-term partners, the ones that we believe I would have a blast working with this person for a long term. Yeah, you know, it's not about a financial transaction. It's about I see myself as a partner of this entrepreneur. I would love to continuously help him because in the end of the day, it's I learned over these last years that the financial transaction bit, it is important, of course, but if you're not working with people that you truly enjoy working as a partnership, it goes sideways. And this is what we look for. Great entrepreneurs that have the work ethic and have a fit, a cultural fit with us, and great businesses that we think our playbook and our knowledge can really scale. And basically, we do a revenue share deals and some stock deals as well, depending on the growth that they're going to have. But I would love for companies that are between 500K to 1.5 million annual revenues to get in touch with us and go to our website, do the intake, tell a little bit about their story, tell a little bit about who they are and what is their ambition. And we usually start a pro bono. If we believe that there's something here, we start a pro bono free of charge coaching and mentoring for these companies from 3 to 6 months. So we work together for 2 to 6 months. We try to help. We try to understand if we are fit. And if we do believe we are fit for long term, then we go in full blown and we push them together and within our business model. But at first, we're just looking for potential businesses and potential entrepreneurs to talk to us and this is one of the things that really fulfills me is trying to help other entrepreneurs to grow, and that's why we do this the start of engagement really as a free of charge.
Got it. Love it. Jumpventures.co is the name of the site. Leo, I'd love to end this on a lightning round if you're up for it. So I got about 10-ish, 11-ish questions here to just rapid fire. So don't need a whole lot of background, just like super fast answers top of mind if you're up for capping it out.
Sure.
First question, how do you describe the e-com environment in a couple words right now?
Roller coaster ride, as always.
What's your favorite piece of software in your e-commerce tech stack?
I think these guys should start really paying me, but Triple Whale, I really love the attribution software at Triple Whale, and I recommend to all the entrepreneurs we work together.
What's one of the fondest memories from your childhood in Brazil?
The beach. It's just playing the beach with my friends and my family. This is the thing that always takes me back.
Nice. If you weren't living in the Netherlands, which is where you live, and Brazil, of course, is off the table because that's where you're from, where would you live? What would be a third place? And you've been to it. You've traveled a lot throughout the world. So what's number three on the list?
I have to say that one of the places I had most fun in my life and felt a lot like Brazil was South Africa. So I feel that there's a place I could live again. For some time.
Favorite product you have sold in your e-commerce career?
The Go Case, for sure.
Go Case. What's the hardest part of your business? And we'll go with Go Case as opposed to the incubator.
The best and the hardest is the people. Being there for them, helping them, and yeah, being able to work well with people so that they feel inspired to work for the brand as well.
Yeah. Agreed. How much money is enough? So cash or liquid securities in the bank. If you have this, you know, if you don't make any more money in the future, it'd be unfortunate maybe, but you'd still be fine with this amount in the bank. So how much do you need in the bank to feel like you can live a good, happy life in terms of either withdrawals or living off the interest? What's that number for you?
I think that as a ballpark, $10 million, I go sip margaritas in a beach and that's it.
How many hours a week do you work?
I'm not really counting, but every time I'm not with my kids, I'm on. So no clue, 60, 70.
Number one hobby, and you can't say work. So outside of work and family.
Playing and watching football. Soccer,
yeah, for us Americans out there. And then finally, who's an interesting person you've met through ECF, through e-commerce tool, that comes to mind?
Well, there's so many great people I've met in the network. It's really, really had a blast being part of it. But yeah, I have to say that the businesses that we helped in Jump, many came from ECF. And of course, I think the Wubos, Adrian and Justine, have been a pretty cool couple to have worked with. And yeah, definitely they were great people too that I've met in ECF.
Fantastic. Well, Leo, thank you. This was really fun to dive into, hearing how you think about this and kind of dissect the different stages of growth. Again, jumpventures.co is the website. Reach out, give them some details and start a conversation if you're interested in talking about potentially if that would be a good fit. So Leo, thank you so much. Excited to see what happens with you guys and Jump in the next year. And thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, Andrew. And it was a pleasure being here. And I hope, as that's what I tell everyone that we coach, happy sales this year.
Happy sales this year.
Given you've made it to the end of the episode, there's a pretty good chance you're fairly serious about this e-commerce stuff, which is why you should check out the E-Commerce Fuel community. It's a vetted, vibrant community for 7- and 8-figure brand owners. And joining gives you access to a lively discussion forum for experienced founders sharing insights and getting help. Access to our library of over 20,000 member reviews on everything from agencies to tech to lawyers to all the things that, you know, founders are making hiring decisions or purchasing decisions on to run their business, and invites to member events throughout the year. So if that sounds interesting, you can apply for membership and learn more at ecommercefuel.com. Big thanks to OneClick Upsell from Zipify Apps. Rapidly increase your AOV by offering targeted high-converting upsells. You can get started with them at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. And also to Fulfill.io, an ERP designed specifically to streamline complex e-commerce businesses and the highest rated ERP among our community members. Learn more at ecommercefuel.com/fulfill. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard, adventure often, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
This is the ASY Radio Network, live from New York.